Thanks for ending your work day with Felger and Mads. On 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Dumb move.
And streaming at CBSBostonSports.com.
We'll get right to your phones. I promise I do just want to hear from John Kraft this afternoon on Bill Belichick's future. And again, some fans are concerned about the non-committal nature here of the Krafts. Let's hear what Jonathan had to say.
Yeah, I'll just defer to exactly what Robert said in that interview.
So that I'm makes sure me more nervous. That makes everybody nervous. It puts us on edge.
Well, I also heard that Bill Belichick at a press conference was asked, and he said absolutely or something.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I guess you look at whichever answer you want. Zoe, you talked to Bill. You asked Bill.
Right?
Why don't you go ask him?
Zoe.
I think those questions are given to me. It's the only negative to being in the Super Bowl,
and clearly it's a very, very, very small negative.
Well, the microscope is out.
The microscope is out.
I think Jonathan is just trying to maintain a healthy amount of tension, the good tension.
It's good.
You know, let's not make things too
keeping everybody on their toes.
There's no dysfunction.
No dysfunction, but healthy tension.
Well, but and there's healthy tension. There's been healthy tension in, I think, any season for the 24 seasons we've been in this business. There's been a lot of healthy tensions, and in a couple cases, Zoe cited them, I've seen dysfunction. I don't see dysfunction here at all.
Okay. I dispute that a little bit. We talked about it yesterday. I think there's been some dysfunction on this team. And again, I heard Beadle and Zoe talk earlier, saying, well, the fact that they're here proves there's no dysfunction. And I respectfully disagree with that. I mean, we've seen a lot of dysfunctional teams go to that Dallas Cowboys team in the early 90s was the height of dysfunction, and they won 3 out of 4 and even won their third with Barry Flippin' Swift. I mean, so they had dysfunction, and they were so good that they still won. So the fact that they're here does not prove that there was no dysfunction. It hasn't affected their play on the field, that's for sure. But I think there was some dysfunction there in terms of the Guerrero stuff being kicked off the plane and off the team and players not knowing which trainer to go to, that's a little dysfunctional. And the Garoppolo trade, not even picking up the phone and listening to other teams, that's a little dysfunctional. And then having it all spill out to Seth Wickersham, who, you know, he had Patriots people talking to him. People were talking. That's a little dysfunctional. So I think there's been a level of dysfunction on this team that we haven't seen in years past. That's all. All right, back to your phones. Howard in Burlington. Hi, Howard. How are you?
Hey, guys. Good afternoon. So I agree, you know, I agree kind of with Maz about this game and how the Eagles balanced deeper team. But I don't know if you guys read or saw the article by Greg Bishop in the latest Sports Illustrated. Did you guys see any of that? Anybody read that?
I've heard snippets of it. Just quickly, what did he say?
So I just want to quickly, I'll get to it. Brandon Lloyd said that the Patriots scheme around the varying skills of the personnel who surround their one brilliant constant at quarterback. The names change from Brown.
Howard. I can't be read the article. I'm sorry. I don't want to hear you read the article.
Yeah, look, my feeling about the Brady Belichick part of it is, of course, they have the best coach in the quarterback. They always do. There have been plenty of years, though, where that has been not enough. That they have fallen short despite that because they were deficient in other areas. And again, on the one hand, you know, the Patriots and their fans like to cite the fact that it's a team sport and how it takes the group. And then when they have deficiencies, they say, well, what about the coach and the quarterback? Well, which one is it then? So that's all. I just think Philadelphia feels like a more complete team to me this year. And you want to say no superstars? Fine. We felt that way about the 2001 Patriots at the time. You know, little did we know there were some superstars there, but you know, to me, it's about the collection, how they play together, and I think the Eagles are a legit opponent.
Aaron in Fall River, go ahead, please.
Hey, how you doing? Listen, the thing that gets me is all week long, everybody's talking about the difference between Belichick and Peterson, and will Peterson let it go at the end of the game and blow it. But we act like Belichick, who already had 3 Super Bowls, didn't puke down the front of his sweatshirt in that Super Bowl against the Giants, even after the Tyreek catch. 39 seconds left of the game, you sent an all-out blitz and leave 5-for-8 Ellis Hobbs against Plaxico Burress. That was a great play call. That was one of the worst defensive play calls in history. Nobody ever mentions that.
Okay, Aaron, yes, Bill's not perfect, but you're saying you're handicapping the coaches and saying that Bill has just as much a chance to screw up as Doug Peterson?
Let's not make it sound like experience, because Belichick had already won 3 Super Bowls at that time. Experience in the final minute, let's not make it sound like that's the end-all, be-all, because it's not.
It's not, but if you have to handicap who's going to make the right calls in the last 5 minutes of the game, who do you pick?
Bill.
Okay, and that's, of course, he's not perfect, and of course he's made mistakes.
But when the pressure's on, there's nobody better.
Of course there's no one better. That doesn't mean he's 100%. He's not. He's had his moments, and so if he has one on Sunday, maybe that costs him. But I don't know how you could possibly handicap the game and say it's a one-score game in the last 5 minutes. What side's going to make the right calls and have the best decision-making? It's obviously the Patriots.
I mean, you can't. There's no taking away from Belichick and Brady there. You can't do it. They're too accomplished. They've shown it too many times. Like, you know, which is what you've never heard me say this week, the Patriots are going to choke this time. I mean, who the hell would predict that? So no one knows what's going to happen in the game. I'm just telling you, I think Philly's a formidable opponent.
Here's AJ in the truck. Hi, AJ.
Hey, guys. You said that if Brady was to win or whatever and pack it up after this year, he would be completely forking the Patriots.
Yes.
And
I can't hear you. Can't hear you. Okay. Phones have sucked. The quality of phones have sucked. Chris and Raynham. Go ahead, Chris.
Hey, Maz. All week I listened to you say how the Patriots have the advantage of coach and quarterback. Nothing else. Do you remember LeGarrette Blount, the guy that you guys spent last year railing against? He's their leading rusher this year. Jay Ajayi, who's nothing but a home run hitter, is their second leading rusher they got halfway through the season. So who has a better matchup at running back and quarterback and wide receivers?
Do you think the Patriots are deeper at the skill positions on offense?
Yes, 100%. And you factor in that Tom Brady's the quarterback throwing to those skill positions, not Nick Foles, who went 19 for 38 less than 30 days ago against the Raiders, who have one of the worst defenses in the league.
Yeah, okay. It's true. Yeah, that was his bad game. He had a bad game against the Raiders.
Do the Pats have better skill players than the Philadelphia Eagles?
It's close. I mean, the peak players that the Patriots have, Gronk, the Eagles don't have a Gronk. But when I get past Gronk, and I like Deion Lewis, okay, but when I get past Gronk, the Patriots receivers really don't scare me all that much. I like Amendola as much as anyone else does. But when Chris Gasper sat with us last Friday and said that, you didn't see Amendola catching passes when they were playing man-to-man, all of a sudden they played zone, and Amendola started catching balls. I don't know if Amendola can be man-to-man coverage anymore. I don't think he's that quick.
I'd still take him when you've got to have it, even if it is man-to-man. We're talking, you know, 3rd and 11, 3rd and 12. I trust Amendola more than I do like a trick guy like Nelson Aguilar.
Yeah, I don't know how much of a trick guy Aguilar really is, though.
And I think they use him on like jet sweeps and stuff like that.
And I think Jeffrey's a good receiver. I think Ertz is a good player. I think Ajayi can catch it. And, of course, Blunt's the leading rusher. Ajayi didn't get there until halfway through the season. And I think Clement can catch it. I just think there are a lot of guys to cover.
We've got Chris in Worcester. Hi, Chris.
Hello. I think Belichick's overrated. The Seattle Super Bowl, you know, what if they came down with a minute left and scored the touchdown, and then Belichick doesn't use his timeouts? I don't know how he doesn't start using his timeouts, but if they would have scored the touchdown, you know, that speaks for itself. So he's been very lucky, I think. What do you think?
I think the team has had some luck. And when you say Belichick's overrated, I mean, we guffaw. But, I mean, he's considered the greatest coach in the history of football. If he's not, then he's a little overrated, right? So, I mean, like, that's not that outrageous of a statement. He didn't say that Belichick sucks.
I mean, if you take it in the literal sense. But really, if we're talking, if he's not the greatest coach in the history of the game.
Top three.
Two, maybe?
Yeah.
I mean, it's him and Lombardi, isn't it?
Yeah.
Walsh?
I put Walsh in there,
okay,
yeah.
Okay, so, like, I just think once you get to that stage, you're splitting hairs. What are we talking about? You say number one, I say number two. We flip it around, the other guy says the opposite.
That Seattle thing, though. Pete Prisco is a big believer in this. He said this the other day, that Belichick not calling that timeout against the Seahawks was he froze. And that if Seattle scores there, you've just burned 30, 40 seconds off the clock, less time that you'll have for Tom Brady to go back and tie the ball game or try and go ahead. And Bill actually screwed that up and was lucky that Wilson threw the interception. I believe, personally, Bill had a lockdown on the situation and just let the clock wound because he thought that that would put more pressure on Seattle. And he was right. I thought Bill did that intentionally. What do you think?
I think it was likely intentional. Likely intentional. But the end of that game, did the Seahawks blow it or did the Patriots win it?
Seahawks blew it.
Okay, so that's how I feel too.
But I think Bill let him. Like, I think Bill, I do believe that Bill looked across the field and said, let's just see what they're going to do here. Let's not bail them out with a timeout of our own. Let's not let them catch their breath. They're about to do something here. Let's just see. And I don't think he blew it. I think that was intentional, and I think his instincts were proven right.
Yeah, I think it was he saw the freak out across the field. I have to believe that. As long as he'd been around the league and as much as he's seen, yeah, I think he felt that it was getting tense. We're going to let them puke on themselves. And you got to give him credit, too. Remember in that game, they had Kyle Arrington on that Chris Matthews who was eating them alive, and then he decided, all right, we got to switch this up. That last caller just sounds mad that Bill Belichick gets credit for a Super Bowl 49. Like, he made big decisions in that game. Again, taking Arrington off Chris Matthews, putting in Malcolm Butler. Like, you know, if you don't like the end of the game, you got to give him credit there, fella.
Jane New Bedford, go ahead, please.
How you doing, guys? Long-time listener, first-time caller. I appreciate Felger and Murray for representing the Patriots out there in Indianapolis.
God.
But Matt's dogging the defense of the Patriots. But if I can remember, today somebody predicted a 38-9 victory, which means they can only put up field goals and not get in the end zone. Well, towards the end of the season, I don't know if you guys want to look up the rankings.
So, Jay, now you believe Seth Wickersham?
Because Seth Wickersham is the one that predicted 38-9, right?
So you didn't believe him when he reported about the internal strife in the Patriots organization, but now that he's predicting 38-9 New England, you think he's a good reporter?
Now he's one of us.
Now he's a good guy. So, look, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that I think that the Eagles have a better roster and a deeper team than you.
Shame
I'm
on
sorry.
You. Shame.
I apologize 1,000 times.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
No one says it like they do. Like they do.
So my question to the people of Boston is, what are you, nuts?
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hey, Patriots fans, are you still struggling to find reasons to hate the Philadelphia Eagles?
Yeah!
Well, struggle no more, because Felger and Maz have got you covered.
Learning to hate them, learning to hate the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah, you know I hate the Eagles?
Tell me, bro, I need more reasons to hate.
They're nothing but soft rock trash. I need a band that gets me cranked up, brother, like Ozzy.
Wait, I thought we were talking about...
Hotel California, Desperado, the bland harmonies of Witchy Woman.
Bro, I really don't think we're talking about the same thing.
No, I know exactly what I'm talking about. I hate these Eagles and those Eagles.
Yeah, f*** the Eagles and f*** the Eagles.
I'm not.
You're underselling the Eagles.
I might be.
You're overselling Nick Foles.
I think the league is down, and I think this is another indication of it. Look, I believed in the quadruple bye, and I guess I was wrong about the Jaguars. Maybe I'll be wrong about the Eagles. But I just don't. I just don't fear them. It's, the league is a mess, and the Pats have capitalized. The league's a mess, and the Patriots aren't. Just a good year not to be a mess.
Or they're just the best of the bad is how I've referred to them.
Yeah,
and
look, I mean, the Patriots aren't bad. In a normal given NFL year, they'd be among the 3 or 4, 5 best teams in the league. But because no one else can keep their crap together or stay healthy, the Pats are the best team in the league. But if this were a normal year, you know, if Zeke Elliott wasn't suspended, or Carr, or Rodgers, or Wentz, or Watson don't get hurt, or Pittsburgh isn't just a total dumpster fire at the coaching level, you know, I just ripped off 5 or 6 things, then you're among those teams. Like, I don't think you're not better than those teams. You're in that mix, and you might be here, but... Now I think that the gap between you and the league is as big as it's ever been. It's not because of you. It's because of the league.
Okay, who do you think the best team in the league was this year?
You.
I think it was Philly. I do. I think it was Philly. I think Philly was the best team in the league this year. And again, if they had Wentz, I'm not sure there'd be many people giving me any sort of resistance. And I'm happy to hear, through Mad Dog, that there were football people that look at the Eagles roster and feel the same way that I do. Because I'm easy to discredit. I'm not a football guy. I'm a baseball guy. Fine. Yeah, Maz, what do you know? Puff it and stuff it, right? That's exactly what it is. So fine, I'll stick it. I'm telling you, I think Philly's pretty good. I think they got a good team.
Okay, and Maz has particular questions on the Patriots' defense. Danny and Quincy, do you have those concerns about the Patriots' defense?
Well, I mean, the last 4 times I've called your show, I've complained about the defense. I guess the worst thing I could say about them is I haven't learned anything about them because the other teams keep self-destructing on their drives. And Tony, every time I've said that, you've hung up on me, Felger, and then you guys talk amongst yourselves and you say, I don't know, Tony, are you concerned with the defense? No, Michael, I'm not concerned with the defense. I don't know what Danny's talking about. They look pretty good to me. They're always in the right places, Tony. That's what you said the last time. So now change your mind.
No, see, Danny, you twist things around. No, what I've said is that... No, no, you do. I've said that what they are is they're in the right places now relative to where they were earlier in the year. But I still see guys open. I still see a soft run defense. And on this Philly team, I see more weapons than I've seen from any team that they've played other than Pittsburgh.
I don't disagree.
I think that's going to be a problem.
I don't disagree with that at all. We were on the same page. But I was talking about some of the games during the regular season. I named them, or the Oakland game, the Denver game. I went right down the list, and you guys never had a problem with anything the defense did, including last week.
Dan, who do you like in this game?
You know, Tony, like you say, pick it and stick it. Man, I'm scared to death of the Patriots because I still don't know enough about the Patriots. I really don't. I heard Bedard say that they kind of screw around at the beginning of the game, like experimenting to see what teams are doing, and if it doesn't work, you waste a quarter and a half of football and get down by 7 or 14 points as an experiment, and then you come back? I'm not comfortable with that. Are you?
Kind of. Yeah, I think their approach has worked for the most part. I mean, call me crazy. And it's not, you know, screwing around is the wrong way to put it. They see how the game is played and then adjust.
They experiment a little.
Well, but it's not experimenting.
Well, they're feeling out.
Feeling out. Fine. Feeling out. A boxing match. The first couple rounds, you're just jabbing and feeling the guy out. I think they do that. And so I think sometimes they get behind in that situation, but they know it's a 60-minute game. And so they plan accordingly. I'm okay with that. I'm fine with that.
Yeah, I don't have a huge problem with that approach either. And I don't know, maybe the right word is that early in the game, they spend a lot of time assessing. That's what they do. They put different formations out there, and they assess what the defense is doing. What are the personnel groups? Because they know who they want to attack in what situations. And then based on how the defense is responding early in the game, they can attack them late. So that to me makes perfect sense, that you approach it as you approach the game as a marathon, not as a sprint. And maybe too many of these opposing teams approach it as a sprint, and that's why in the fourth quarter the Patriots are able to have their way and pull these things out.
Bingo. Here's Ernie and Revere. What do you got for us today, Ernie?
I don't know. Murray, has anyone called you Murphy out there?
No, not yet.
Okay, I want to start the Murphy fan club, because that's a riot when they do that, because you get so aggravated.
No, people back home do it. I haven't heard it here.
I laugh when they do it. Mike, is Charlie
yes, Ernie.
White sniffing around maybe for the offensive job next year?
Is Charlie White? Do you say is Charlie White sniffing around?
Yeah,
I think he is a little bit.
Huh?
Yeah, I think he is a little bit, Ernie. But I don't think he has any shot.
Really? Yeah. And Maz, listen, Maz. No, you got the right to believe they're more talented, but you should have learned by now. It don't matter the talent. It matters what's under the helmet and under the uniform that makes the difference to win the football games.
I mean, you can make the claim the Falcons. Thank you, Ernie. You can make the claim the Falcons were more talented, the Seahawks were more talented, the Steelers are more talented.
Sure.
You could make that case.
Yes. Yes, and I would tell you that in some of those cases, it took a miracle for the Patriots to win the game.
Is it a miracle, or are they just playing 60
some
minutes?
Some of it was a miracle.
And the other team's not.
I mean, who do you blame for the Atlanta's play calling at the end of that game?
Atlanta.
Me too. Now, again, I can't tell you that Philly won't make the same mistakes. I'm just telling you that the Patriots are more vulnerable than you think they are. And again, compare this defense to other years when they've come to the Super Bowl. And I'm telling you, the only other year where I think they had a worse defense than this one was 2011, and they lost. So this, to me, is a below-average defense.
And Murray, you know what? And again, I'll just call you out, Murray. You're take-cornered. Murray was saying that all season long.
Yep, and I'm with Maz. The Patriots defense mostly stinks.
And had the field because of it.
Mm-hmm.
And now you get to the Super Bowl and you back off. You flip.
Yeah, it's called during Super Bowl week, it's what we call pulling a Felger. Because you did this last year when you were take-cornered and took the field.
It's true.
And you said, I can't live with myself if I take the Atlanta Falcons.
I will never pick the Falcons over anyone in anything important.
I'm not taking the Philadelphia Eagles with Nick Foles at quarterback. He's that big of a detriment to this team's success. Yeah, the Eagles are better on both sides of the line. But beyond that, I'm sorry. I think their linebackers aren't all that good. They're not going to be able to hang with the running backs. And if this was any other team, the Vikings, New Orleans, hell, even Jacksonville with that scare in the AFC Championship game, I thought someone was going to knock him off. This Eagles team with Foles, no, it ain't happening.
Three of the four meaningful games he has started, Murray, his rating's been over 100.
Ooh.
Okay.
So why do you mock that stat?
Well, he looked great in that game against the Falcons, where the Falcons had a shot to win there. If it wasn't for stupid Steve Sarkisian cutting the field in half for Matt Ryan and Julio Jones at the end of that game. The Falcons should have won that game. The Eagles really shouldn't even be here.
You can say the same thing about the Patriots.
Here's Sean in Hingham. Hi, Sean.
Hey, guys. Tony just answered my question. He thinks 2011 was the worst defense, but I'm going to ask you the question and then make a comment. Which defense do you guys think is the worst out of 07, 11, and 14? I think 11 was the worst. I think 14 is probably the best, at least on paper. And then secondly, with this whole Brady versus, you know, every other athlete conversation, you know, like the bigger picture outside of football, shouldn't the guy he actually should be rivaling in football, maybe outside of Joe Montana, who I think should be higher than Joe Montana, is Jerry Rice? He won all those rings. He has a ton of the receiving records that probably, frankly, won't even get touched. He played until he was 40 and was still relevant. He kind of had a Brady thing. I think it should be more Rice instead of Montana.
Yeah, that's fair. The greatest NFL player of all time.
I mean, you can make that argument for sure.
I mean, so you would have to put Rice ahead of Montana, which I might allow for. I mean, you might be able to make that case. That
I just put a premium on quarterbacks.
Yeah, I mean, everyone does.
So,
you know about the greatest players of our lifetime, right? I mean, I put Lawrence Taylor on the list.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? You know, it's like, it's Rice, it's Montana, it's Lawrence Taylor, it's Brady, you know. And I go back, you know, so, you know, my clock starts called at 1980, you know, around there. I mean, those are the guys.
How about Gronk?
I don't know. I don't know if he's had enough healthy time to do that yet.
I'll tell you, I think he's a force. He's close to that group. He's right there. He's pretty close.
The 2007 Patriots defense, overrated.
Way overrated.
Overrated.
Way overrated.
Old and slow, and the 2014 defense was better than 07. 2014, again, you just sort of forget now. Jamie Collins, Chandler Jones, Dante Hightower, all sort of in their prime on the field at one time.
Darrell Revis, Devin McCourty, you know, Malcolm Butler just budding at the time.
Browner?
Yes.
I mean, that was a good defense.
Now, they had a lot of players on that defense. And I told you, I looked this up today using the Football Outsiders metric. When the Patriots have had a defense that was below average based on how Football Outsiders assesses those defenses, they've lost the Super Bowl. In 2007, their defense was below average.
Was it really?
It was below average because they had so many big leads. The defense wasn't put in a lot of tough spots. And then all of a sudden, in a big game, now look, it was fluky, but they lost the game. And so I think at a time where they needed to make a stop, they couldn't make a stop.
We've got Matt in Walpole. Matt, quickly, what do you got for us?
Hey, guys, I wanted to talk about the Pats' defense obviously being vulnerable, but them possibly creating turnovers to win the game, because turnovers usually win the game in the end.
Do you know that the Pats have gone four straight games without forcing a turnover, which is like the longest run they've had since Bill got here?
Something like that.
There's some crazy stat out there. I forget what it is.
And
but
it's only one in their last six, too.
It's something along the lines of they've gone four straight without a turnover, and that's the longest drought they've had since Ray Barry was their coach. Like, so there's, I'm not sure exactly what the stat is, but something like that. They don't take the ball away.
No, and Philly does. So the one thing I can, to me, it feels like you're going to get turnovers in this game. I don't think this is going to be a turnover-free game. Philly's 18 games this season,
hold on. You think there's going to be turnovers even though the Pats don't take the ball away?
Oh, yeah, because I think Philly's do. I mean, I think they're due on both sides.
I see.
I think Philly's got a history, again, this year of the 18 games they've played, Philly has forced at least one turnover in 15 or 16 of them. I mean, just about every game they play, they force a turnover. And I think that they're probably going to get one at some point. Brady's usually good for a pick in a postseason game. And then on the other side, I mean, again, you got an inexperienced quarterback on the other side relatively. You get some guys who fumbled the ball, and the Patriots are due. They are due to get the football.
26 fumbles for Philadelphia this year.
I don't think this is going to be a turnover-free game. Like, to me, the ball's coming out somewhere.
Felger and Maz.
This is Felger.
The man is beholden to no one.
And Maz.
I don't really know what to expect.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Can you envision a scenario where you're the one that has to tell Tom Brady it's time to retire as a Patriot?
I think Tom Brady's earned the right to have that be a decision he makes when he wants to make it.
Our intent is we have the best people in their respective positions, and we keep them here for a very long time.
As we sit here today, do you have any question that Bill Belichick and Tom Brady will be back as Patriots next season?
I appreciate you asking that question, and I'm not going to respond to it. You'll just have to see for yourself.
going on?
How are you doing, Jay? So Andrew Kramer asked Robert Kraft, are you fully confident that they'll be back next year? And Robert says, you'll have to see. Why is he so cagey about that?
I don't think he's cagey. I don't think he knows the answer to it.
Do you don't think they know whether Belichick's going to be back or not?
No, not that. I just, you never know after, let's say they win again. You don't know what's going to go through their mind. They may just say, you know what, done. I mean, you have no idea, right? Even when guys think they know, look, Tony Gonzalez, he basically retired after they played the 49ers in the NFC Championship game, and he knew he was done. And then 2 months later, he calls and says, hey, you think Thomas and Smitty would consider having me back? I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, yeah, I think I changed my mind. I'm like, didn't you, like, say goodbye all to, like, every stadium this year? You knew you were gone? He's like, I thought I was gone. I don't think he's being cagey. I just think that
he's being human.
You don't know. But I will say this, too. The marriage they've had with the Patriots all this time, the fact that there hasn't been more stuff. I mean, it's a marriage. They're a better married couple as a whole team than every marriage I've ever seen. I mean, are you serious? I mean, how much time they spend with each other, and you don't have all the controversies that you had this year, year after year after year after year, is incredible. I think people are looking at it through the wrong lens.
And it's true. I mean, that's fair. If you put some perspective on it, I see what you're saying. But were there issues legitimate this year?
I think there's issues every year. I don't think it was more so where, obviously, the place didn't explode when it happened. But every single year, each guy himself in there, in order to play in the NFL, you got to be crazy. To play on this level, right? To be a pro athlete at a high level, you got to be crazy. So each guy in that locker room probably has about five different personalities. So every coach there probably has five different personalities. So you got a lot of personalities all in that room that you've got to somehow, you know, keep it above the fray. And then you got to get an awful lot of lucky bounces when you're hoping everybody doesn't lose their mind.
See, I think the Patriots are just better at hiding it, right? You know, when you have the internal disagreements, people don't hear about it. But that aside, if I were to ask you, put a percentage on it, what's the likelihood that Belichick would ever walk?
Right. But here's my thing also about, let's say, fights or disagreements. Michael Strahan, you guys know, is my best friend. He and I fight every day. Every day. And if you're covering us, you would go, oh, my gosh, that's it. These guys are never going to make it. I mean, he literally could say, we could look at a red stoplight, and I could say it's red, and he would say it's not red, it's green, just to piss me off, and then, boom, we'd start fighting. It's just how we are, right? So same thing, if there's any relationship, you're going to have this. Do I think the dynamic in there has changed? Yeah, like Tom has a family now. He's not going to be there, you know, 5 a.m. to 10 p.m., but does he still outwork the world? Absolutely. Tom has that sickness where he is constantly, he can't shut it off. So 3 in the morning, he's texting and calling, hey, what if we do this? What if we do that? He's unlike anybody I've ever seen.
Jay Glazer, Fox Sports, joining us here from the Big Y World Class Market Guest Chair. Jay, what went down with that Garoppolo trade? It still doesn't seem right.
Well, I think at the end they realized, I do think they looked at hoping as long as they could to keep Garoppolo, and then realized, it doesn't look like Tom's going anywhere. And in the end, you know, they might as well get something. And what the Patriots do also is they strategically do put people kind of where they want. Right? The Jamie Collins thing went down. Okay, you want out? We'll send you to Cleveland. Right?
So what was the strategy behind San Fran?
Because they love Garoppolo. So Lynch played there, which people forget. So him and Belichick are very close. And they put it out like it was him and the head coach.
Shanahan.
With the relationship he's had with Mike and Kyle. And that was part of it, but it was also John Lynch was a big part of this as well. They didn't open it up for everybody there, but I think in the end, if Tom's going to play in another few years, you can't have Jimmy back.
Okay, but that doesn't – so, I mean, I understand.
But I think they went into it this year thinking, okay, there's a good chance this could be it for Tom, and okay, we got to figure something out. And I think eventually they just realized we're not going to be able to – and Jimmy wanted to play.
Okay.
He was like, I don't want to wait anymore.
Why not take offers from other teams? I mean, I know if you want to do right by the player, Jay, but – That's not what's in the best interest of the team.
That's not how they do business. They did it with Chandler Jones too. They called the Cardinals, right? They didn't shop him either. They didn't open up, and I didn't understand it.
Why?
I got a call from the Cardinals asking about Chandler. You know how he is, if he's, because obviously his brother John's had some issues. If they have similar issues, no, not at all. And they're saying that's how they do business. Everybody has a way of doing business. That's how the Patriots do business. I don't know. I'm not them. but it's worked out pretty well.
I mean, so but the wins and losses, but they could have gotten more for both players.
They could have just opened it up for the highest bidder, no doubt about it. For whatever reason, they don't do that. Even when they did Randy Moss to the Vikings.
It was, yeah, Vikings,
right?
Yeah.
So, you know, he did, Bill did like Randy, right? And he's still, even that, he's like, and obviously there was a lot of tension going there. So he sent him somewhere. He could have sent him to the Abyss somewhere, but he didn't.
So why did
they don't open it up? They don't do that. They're like, they have certain teams that they know they can do business with. And that's it. They don't like their business out there.
So why do you think that they wanted Garoppolo in a good spot? Do you think it's because
Bill? I think they really like him.
Okay.
Yeah, and everybody in there likes him. I think they did not want to do him wrong. Absolutely. And do I think there was like, it was bad between him and Tom? No. But I think Jimmy, again, he was the guy in there that he's able to stay 24 hours a day inside that locker room. And he learned, he's able to sit there and learn and watch how Tom does it. Which, again, Tom is, man, that you'll, I've been around the greatest fighters in the world. I've been around a lot of greatest performers in the world. There's just nothing like him, man. He just knows how to outwork everybody and keep everything. He has that sickness. He sees things differently than everybody else. And it's not that, I mean, he could play for another 10 years if he wants. Well, 5 years if he wants. It's not that he's even getting so much better. It's just that the guys who come in the league are getting worse in how they prepare and getting worse in their work ethic and getting worse as far as what's important to them. Like, we're training Andrew Whitworth.
You.
Whit is saying, it's easier for me now. Like, man, back in the day, I used to have to go against these guys who they watched just as much film as I did. Now that's not the case anymore. So it's getting easier, and that's why I think it's guys like Tom are able to last much longer.
Do you think if Garoppolo does well out there, doesn't it make Belichick look better?
Doesn't make it look better?
In other words, see, I had the guy. I was able to draft and develop an edge.
No, I think people would be ticked off that they didn't figure out a way to keep him. But you can't keep him. I mean, especially what you're going to have to pay these guys. You end up having to pay Jimmy, you know, in the 20s, and then Tom above that, and then you really have no room for anything else. I just financially don't see how you could do it.
Jay Glazer, Fox Sports, what do you think of this week?
You know, I think personnel-wise, you look at it and you go, okay, Eagles personnel, probably better personnel. But you guys were down 28-3 last year. I don't know how you go against that guy. I just can't go against it.
Do you think that the Philadelphia Eagles from the, you know, after you get past the coach and quarterback, which is, I know, hard to do, but once you get past there, the Eagles could be the better team?
I think personnel-wise they're a better team, yeah. But they don't have Tom. I know I'm found. This is the most fanboy I've ever sounded like, but I just appreciate guys who grind and outwork the world. Look, I have our MMA business. My partner's Randy Couture, who had no business doing what he's done. He's, you know, 6-time world champ, ex-Army guy, didn't start till he was late, and all he did was just grind you, until you finally said, I'm done. Get this dude off of me, right? And if he tore a hamstring or a groin or an elbow, you just never knew. He didn't let you. So I appreciate the hell out of when guys have that, you know, that work ethic, whether they're different than the rest of the world.
All right, tell me about your MMA stuff.
So we're coming to your neck of the woods, Bellator. I signed with them to be the new host of Bellator. I was the first host of an MMA show in America when I did Pride, the Pride Fighting Championships back for Fox back in 2004, and then I did the UFC. But now I'm with Bellator, who's using a similar format that we used at Pride back in the day, which is great. It's on Paramount Network. Our next fight is in your neck of the woods.
Which is where?
It's in Mohegan Sun.
Okay.
And it's Matt Mitrione, who used to play for the Giants, as a backup for the Giants and for the Vikings. He's fighting Big Country Roy Nelson. But it's like, you have all these legends. You're putting them together here. You have Rampage Jackson and Fedor Emelianenko and Chael Sonnen and Frank Mir. There's nothing like it. And, man, I'm pretty lucky that I get to do, you know, my four F's in life for football, fighting, faith and family, and be part of the, you know, Bellator family right now.
Are you doing anything
incredible
on Sunday? I mean,
Sunday, no.
You guys don't have the game.
No, we don't have the game. But we have Thursday night football now, which is great.
Thursday night. Okay, so real quick on that one.
Yeah.
Is it worth $550 million?
You're damn right it is.
It is.
Yeah.
It's a bad product, Jay.
No. We're going to make it great.
Those Thursday night games suck. How?
We're going to cuss.
What are you going to do?
Me and Bradshaw, we got it.
Because you'll Cletus or whatever.
We got it covered. Yeah.
Robot.
We got it covered. Hey, we got. It's our job, right, to make it very entertaining.
You can't.
We are entertaining.
How much lipstick can you put on?
I'm going to put it on, no matter what. It's still. Hey, football is the greatest reality show on TV, no matter what. No matter what happens, it's a ridiculous reality show.
Jay, thanks for coming by.
10 seconds. Where's Kirk Cousins going?
I don't think Kirk Cousins know that, but you know what? If I'm the Denver Broncos, I call him now.
Okay. All right. Long commercial-free segment is next.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub. This is Felger and Mass.
I'm a hypocrite.
Wow.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
We did have more replay interruptions this year. I think that's something we've got to look at. We can improve on. They were reduced in time. As you know, we spent a great deal of time in the offseason on game presentation. How do we make our game more attractive, less stoppages, shorter stoppages when they do occur, whether they're commercial or otherwise? And I think that's one of the things that we're going to focus on. How do we do the replay in a way that will ensure correcting a mistake, an obvious mistake, but make sure that it doesn't interrupt the flow of the game?
Every league, it just gets worse by the year. More things to review, longer reviews, more nonsense. Gets worse every year in every league. Does the NFL have the balls to be the one that says, no, it's time to start scaling it back? We'll see. I doubt it, because I just feel like it's taken hold that as long as you can look at things, you'll look at them as long as it takes to look at every blade of grass, which is not how it was intended, but it's mucked up the game. But if anyone will do it, it is the NFL.
Well, I was just going to say it'll be the NFL or the NBA.
Yeah.
Like, it feels to me like both of those leagues have at least looked at the product and said, okay, we got to tighten it up a little. Right, and the NFL took away commercials, and the NBA took away timeouts.
That's right. You're right, Maz. So it would be those two. And the NFL, you know, they did it, and I think people didn't notice it, but they eliminated the touchdown, timeout, kickoff, timeout thing. And I think it helped the game. There was times that I did notice it. And it just sort of blended into the background, and I think people stopped thinking about it. But that was a good little change that they made. So now do the same thing on replay. You know, you've got to pump it into your replay officials' heads and get the fans to think the same way. And that is, we're not going to look at every atom and every millimeter of blade of grass. If it's an obvious mistake, we're going to correct it. If it's not, we're going to let it stand.
And I still don't know why they even need the on-field personnel to go to the headset.
Oh, please, it's ridiculous.
Or to go to the video replay. You know, replay. Just you should be able to have someone tell you in an earpiece, we reviewed it, keep going. Like, that should take 10 seconds.
So we'll see if they actually have the guts to do it. The fact that Goodell's giving it lip service is encouraging. He also said something about, you know, changing the catch rule, which I don't want them to change. But if it's all part and parcel of not looking to the thing to the nth degree with replay and the ball moving a millimeter, and if just in general they're moving to a place where we're not going to try and be so finite, that's what they need to do. Because they're still losing, you know, they're still losing valuable minutes with this, you know, with this nonsense of looking at the ball rolling, a millimeter of an inch, you know. It's just ridiculous. So
let me just ask you this generic question. Do you think the catch rule is going to be the same next year as it is now?
No.
Yeah, I bet they're going to change it.
See, I'm with Murray. They're also going to change it.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, and maybe
it will not be the same rule.
Right, because if Goodell's saying it, it already means it's in the works, is what I think.
I think they're going to find a way to make that Jesse James play a touchdown. That's what I think.
Once again, trying to screw the Patriots, Maz.
I'm just telling you that I think that's the one that really made everybody go, what the hell?
Stay tuned for more Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.